Chapter 12. No one had wanted a war. No one had seen war until now. For one day, Gardenal Prime turned like meat on a spit under the guns of the Iron Hands fleet. Ship augurs saw the panic spread, ripples of red, the usual inconsistencies of biosignature reads enhanced to precision sharpness by the compound effect of volume. The astropaths felt it, and more viscerally than those on the command deck watching their screens run red. The ritually blinded psychers clawed at the padded walls of their sanctums, their mental defences overwhelmed by hellish visions. The earth split. The sky fell. Billions screamed into the night. But there would be no keeping ahead of this storm. The warships of the Iron Tenth did not move. There was no need. The planet obliged, presenting new targets for obliteration as quickly as they could reload and recharge. Lance strikes demolished hab towers and militia fortresses without distinction. Macro ordnance pulverized districts. Cyclonic torpedoes and magma bombs laid waste to hundreds of kilometers of urban conglomeration at a time, fracturing the rockcrete-fused crust, revivifying extinct geologies for one dying surge of volcanism. Cities with hours of grace before the bombardment collapsed into the earth as it turned molten. Manufactories that the 413th expedition had gone to such lengths to preserve slipped into rivers of lava. Gardenal Prime was not the first world to be scoured of a recalcitrant populace in the Emperor's name, but it was the first where this was meted out with such calculated brutality. It was punishment, scaled towards the far end of an infinite series beyond mere collective. No genocide perpetrated by the warhounds had ever been so severe, or so total. After one complete revolution, it ceased. What had been a pole-to-pole spread of human habitation, home to hundreds of billions, had become a steaming sphere of magmic red and twisted steel. The creaks and groans of the devastated planetary megalopolis reverberated silently through the void, relayed like the moans of the undead through the spectral augurs and geographs of the Iron Hands in orbit. Only one narrow line of latitude remained unbroken, a complex of linked fortifications, well sited in a zone of tectonic stability within the Capitolis and heavily void-shielded, still stood, albeit now surrounded by a moat of lava 100 meters wide. It could have been hit again until the ground beneath it crumbled. The planet could have been virus-bombed or had its atmosphere purged. It was what Perturabo might have done. But what was war for, if not a demonstration of strength? Ferus would look the Gardenal in the eye as the life left them. He would see the moment they realized they had always been weak. And war was what they were getting. The sky was the red of metal rust. Tremors running the scale from distracting to ground-shaking ran beneath the scuffed boots and dusty, dangerously overheated vehicles of the Imperial Army. The area had come through the bombardment relatively unscathed. Its buildings were intact, the ground beneath them solid, which, as blessings went, was as good as they got. But it wasn't going to remain that way for long. Tull Riordan had watched the bombardment crawl from east to west, and while the soldiers under his command managed to grab sleep in shifts, he'd been wide awake to see it crawl back towards them, west to east. And when he'd seen the fireballs falling from the sky towards their islet of baked rockcrete and groaning plasteel, he'd known the reprieve was over. After 3 decades of not exactly risk-averse soldiering, he knew he'd been pushing his luck for some time now, but part of him had never really believed it would end, as if death had had its chance and passed. Most men would have taken the honourable discharge and the meagre pension that came with a bullet in the knee. There were plenty of civilian positions for military-trained Medicaid. Not him. He was proud of those 3 decades. Damn proud. He believed in the Crusade, what it stood for, always had. He clung to his belief as if it were the last functioning coolant unit in the galaxy. The rock-crete spire block they'd held as a shelter trembled as a spread of ordnance rocketed overhead and smacked into the ground a few hundred metres away. Plumes of fire and ash rose into the hellish sky to replace the buildings they sent crashing down. Compared to what had gone before, the act of barbarism seemed almost petty. Limping through sprawled divisions of mechanized infantrymen, their visors steamed. Sweating inside death world and hazardous environment gear, Tull walked to the rockcrete barrier that encircled the roof for a better look. Ibran Greep held up a pair of magnoculars. He didn't say much anymore. Every earth tremor brought a nervous twitch. His pupils were pinpricks, his mouth never quite shutting properly, as if his jaw was too tense to allow it. A thin trickle of drool ran down his chin and under his collar. He was still in his dress uniform. He was sweating like a grox, but didn't seem to realise it, so thoroughly dosed on combat stims and painkillers that Grip probably didn't know his own name. All for the cause, he told himself. The security and manifest destiny of mankind. But the grand words rang tinnily now. It was easy to believe when you followed a man like Ulan Cicerus. Tull pried the magnoculars from Ibran's white-knuckled grip and brought them to his visor. He waited while the autofocus compensated for heat distortion to zoom into the nearest mound of rubble. He sighed. He couldn't say any more if it was relief or resignation. They were drop pods, cobalt blue and gold, their insignia an untarnished white. He panned the view. Dozens of tiny explosions dotted the devastation as the drop pods blew open and hundreds of ultramarines poured into the last standing remnant of the Gardenal Capitolis. And not just ultramarines. He saw 1,000 sons, about 12 of them led by Amar, and even a glittering contingent of Emperor's children, at least 100 strong. "Where are the Iron Hands?" he mused aloud. Everyone was here but them. Readjusting the magnoculars, he directed their focus through the leaning structures and smoke to the furthest of the drop pods. It had been the first to fall, and had come down nearest to the Gardenal fortress. An ultramarine in the gilded mantle of a veteran was raising the banner of the 15th chapter. His brothers were already firing into the ruins, gunning down the slighter figures of the Gardenal as they fled deeper into the ruins. Another space marine remained by the pod, beside his standard-bearer. He appeared to be delivering a ferocious address to the legionaries as they charged past, his diatribe complete with violent gestures of his bionic hand towards the enemy enclave. The startling blue of his plastron had been butchered to make way for the bulky Orcmetic. Tull didn't recognise him. He was helmed, and to mortal men one armoured space marine looked much like another. But he did recognise the power sword that the warrior held aloft as he spoke. Bloody murder. He glanced at Ibran. He lowered his magnoculars. Cicerus. The last few phrases of the chapter master's address forced through Tull's crackling voxlink, and he winced in pain at the sudden volume. He panned the magnoculars towards the fortress. Its walls were heat-hazed, its defence towers liquidly coloured and indistinct beneath the installation's voids. They shimmered under a constant rain of debris, discolouring to the occasional crump of artillery fire. With a grunt, he tossed his officer's cane from the roof of the spire block. He returned Ibran's magnoculars. "Trooper Grip?" Ibran looked up. "Those tablets that Melian gave you, pass them over." The old colonel obediently did as he was told. Tull unstoppered the vial, coloured tablets falling into his palm. He had no idea what half of them were. 30 years. To end up no better than the Gardenal. With a slug of the brackish liquid in his canteen, he knocked the lot back. Then he gave the order to move out. He still believed in the crusade. He had to. The Iron Hands were the masters of coordinated combined arms warfare. Only one who had never seen one of their ruthlessly orchestrated set-piece engagements at close quarters could ever dispute it. The commander of any other force would have ordered their artillery to cease bombardment the moment that ground forces came within reach of the walls, but the 10th Legion artillerymen knew their guns. They knew how far minimum safe distance could be pushed. Earthshaker and Medusa shells hammered into the Gardenal's wall, even as the breacher and assault units of the Ultramarines' 15th chapter commenced their attack. After 3 hours and 16 minutes of relentless bombardment, as the Imperial onslaught drove the numerically superior Gardenal force from their perimeter defences, there was barely a wall left. The Primaris Lightning's purple sun jinked through the rain of heavy ordnance. The shells were too small to be picked up on Auspex. The guidance systems, even of the Scorpius rockets, too basic to alert the aircraft systems to the danger. Orton Vertinus flew by touch and instinct, every sense exhilarated by the narrowing separation between him and his mortality to the width of a single mistake. Black smoke buffeted the canopy, and he braced, ready for the intake alarms. But the Primaris Lightning was as rugged a piece of kit as had ever been given wings and an engine. A second later, the smoke cleared. Below him, the purple of Second Company moved through the rubble behind the Ultramarines' assault. They matched their pace to the Imperial Army. The regiment's transports and heavy armour rolled alongside. Vertinus tipped his wing in salute as he flashed across Solomon Demeter's rippling standard. "I envy them the chance to stretch their legs," Vox Tyro. The Primaris Lightning was a thirsty machine, but its tanks were massive. Tyro had started complaining of sores, stiff muscles and claustrophobia after about 30 minutes. "You say that now. I imagine it looks rather less sunny down there. Well, you take what you can make of it, brother." Vertinus chuckled. "Edoran Seca, you are veering." Palulinus's perfect tones grizzled through the dashboard vox. "Chapter Master Cicerus has called in an infantry battalion breaking off towards secondary positions. 16 degrees starboard. Close formation and follow me." Confirmations clicked across the frequency. The wing commander's strike fighter broke to starboard, followed after a brief interval by Edoran and Seca. Vertinus glanced aside to where Tyro matched course and speed perfectly. "Ready for a little target practice?" "Only a little." Vertinus opened up the throttle. His engines roared as they flooded the machine with power, forward thrust coming up against the angle of his ailerons to push down his starboard wing and into a hard turn. He howled like a maniac as he descended, G-force widening his grin into a rictus. Nearer to the ground, the smoke thinned. Rockcrete rushed towards him. Bodies in dark grey body armour scattered. Snapshots pattered his armour. By the Primarch, Moses had been right. The Primaris Lightning was a beast. He pulled back on the centre stick, running parallel to the ground at 3 times the speed of sound, then opened fire. Las cannons and multi-lasers ripped through the mass of soldiers as they tried to flee, the survivors flattened by his sonic boom as he thundered through. He broke off, dumping speed, looping back over the soldiers he had not yet killed. He tried not to think of the enemy as men. He reached for the flick switch to open his bomb pods. He almost hesitated. A rain of phosphex cluster-bombed the area.
"Orton, status," foxed Palulinus.
Vertinus's strike fighter wobbled as it climbed, the thermal eddies of 1,000 incinerated human beings upsetting his wings. It was as if he were running over their bodies in a truck. Suddenly, all sense of pleasure departed, and in its absence left him sickened.
"A perfect run, brother," he said, pointedly refusing to look back. "The Primarch will be overjoyed."
The firebrands of Legio Ataris were a force of ill repute, a product of the brief conflict between the Phaeton Forge World and Mars. The Imperious war machines were intemperate, considered by the Collegia Titanica to be unlucky, and aggressively predisposed against any stratagem that did not demand wholesale devastation and a long leash. Ulan Cicerus had called on their firepower only once, a last desperate throw of the dice as the Chapter Master's first attempt at pacifying the Gardenal had turned sour. In Ferrus Manus and Iron Lord Ortec Moore, they had commanders more suited to their way of war. With a wrathful shout blaring through its warhorn, the Reaver Titan, Bellum Sacrum, led the snarling remnants of the Demi-Legio to the slaughter. It took a phenomenal body of men to slow down the Legiones Astartes. Give the Gardenal their due, they were capable of fielding a phenomenal body of men. Cicerus had been right. The Gardenal war machine would have been an incalculable asset to the Great Crusade.
Pity, then, that it had become Amadeus Duquesne's job to destroy it. He roared as he laid into the Gardenale with axe and bolter. His helm augmenters amplified the war cry to a stunning volume, but even he barely heard it. Men screamed, weapons roared, armour whirred and clanged and fizzled sparks, power fields spasmed. Flash grenades popped like strings of firecrackers. Bellum Sacrum sounded her war horn, a long sonorous blast that brought a severely compromised gun tower crashing down in a cascade of rubble and sharply muted screams. Aircraft nipped through the grey plume. A fire raptor, silver edge trims flickering with the ferocity of the firefight below, swooped in, strafing the packed ranks of light infantry with twin streams of shot. Dozens fell in a single pass. Duquesne scarcely noticed. He shouldered in, crushed men against other men, crushed bones to jelly underfoot, resorting to physically dragging a soldier from the packed melee to make space for him to push into. The Gardenal's visor was cracked and flecked with spittle. His expression was a mask of abhorrence, twisted by a cocktail of conditioning and drugs. He beat wildly at Duquesne's armour with bayonet and toe caps, screaming defiance even as Duquesne hurled him aside. Across the slender bulge of the Imperial assault, the story was the same. Duquesne's second wave had bunched in with the vanguard warriors of the 3rd, 13th and 15th legions, compressed onto a narrower and narrower front by the great swell of bodies in clacking grey plate. Sheer volume held the might of the legions at bay, and was even beginning to drive the Imperial's flank into a pinch point where the last of the army's reserves held the breach in the outer wall. Crab-like super-heavy walkers bristling with titan-busting firepower duelled with the Legio Ataris. Tank traps, ditches and rough barricades forced the Legion's tanks into the role of spectators. The ground behind the Ultramarines' advance was littered with the bent remains of Sentinel scout walkers that had attempted to keep pace with the legionaries, only to fall to the withering enfilade from the gun towers of the inner wards. Only a handful of dreadnoughts had made it to the front, towering bulwarks of plasteel and ceramite, from which men and bits of men, torn apart, bullets riddled and aflame, would periodically be thrown into the air. Between sprays of blood and the progressive splintering of his face shield, he marked unit types and formations he had not seen so far. Brutish cybernetica, their dull red armour inscribed with proto-Gothic runic script, trike vehicles mounting devastating anti-armour weapons, soldiers with hieroglyphic electus on their bald heads, surrounded by muttering dwarf familiars and hypnotic auras. He turned his head towards a barely audible crack, just in time to be caught by the blood spraying from Rab Tannen's faceplate. He roared, smearing the blood from his lenses with the scrap of banner he had wound about his forearm. Duquesne's armour was scarred, pitted, scratched, degraded by relentless punishment to the point that even a stray baton round to the head would be potentially deadly. Hardly the way he would want to be found. Turning his grief into a howl of fury, he grabbed a Gardenal soldier by the face, crushed his skull with the barest application of force, and drove his twitching corpse like a riot shield into the press.
"Live forever in glory! For the Primarch!"
His warriors rallied to him, answering his call with cries of their own.
"I'd say the storm is damn well raised, lad."
Duquesne turned to Cafin, but Cafin wasn't there. He was back with Second Company, a casualty of Ferris's decree that Legion boundaries be restored prior to the final assault. Duquesne missed him, now that he was gone. With the last stalwarts of the Gardenal fully engaged by the might of four legions and the god-machines of the Legio Ataris, Ferris Manus delivered one final demonstration of contempt. It was overkill of the highest order, but the compliance of Gardenal Prime had ceased to be a military operation and had become an object political lesson. Not for the Gardenal, of course. Their last chance to draw anything from their first reunion with the Imperium of Man had expired with the arrival of Ferris Manus. It was for everyone else. At his voxed command, one bright speck in the firmament of Gardenal swelled, bleaching the sky of its neighbours with the light of a supernova. It was Fist of Iron, shining over Gardenal Prime like a newly kindled sun, in the split second before the sky above the fortress exploded into the indigos and violets of void shield discharge and aggressively blue-shafted lance beams. The voids held firm, as Ferris had known they would, but the air within their bubble yielded. With an apocalyptic crack of thunder, a blast of overpressure turned rockcrete to explosive blooms of powder and flattened anything lighter than a power-armored space marine. Dominated by light infantry, the Gardenal were decimated. The effect on the Imperial army was comparable. The Primarch of the Iron Tenth was not given to introspection or self-doubt. The endless cycles of codification and reanalysis that must have occupied Gilliman's every moment held no interest for him. Neither did he possess the patience for the moral quandaries that Vulcan or Korax or even Fulgrim indulged prior to a campaign to restore a reluctant diaspora to the Terran fold. There was only one way to wage war, and that was to do it totally, with every tool and weapon at his disposal employed to their absolute. His way. The violet aurora began to burn off, a spasming flicker of void light that came in sympathy to the dusty rattle and sputter of small arms in the killing ground below. Ferris Manus boarded his land raider. It was an Achilles Alpha variant. Its hull armor was wound with wyrms and wyverns, its sponson mounts bearing the silver fist of the Iron Hands. The Primarch's personal standard tore over the belching fumes of the vehicle's exhausts. A skirt of heavy iron scales hung over its lower section of track. It was a thing of powerful beauty, but it was still, first and foremost, a tank. He called it Godhammer. The Land Raider slammed into a barrier of dead flesh. Its tracks squealed, chewing into the corpses of Gardenal's soldiers and spitting out gore and gristle, slewing side to side and coating its skirts with crimson paste. But solid matter could be compressed only so far, and even the ferromantic vigour of Godhammer could only drive it so hard. The forward assault ramp slapped down. Ferris Manus stamped hard until the bodies blocking its proper deployment had been flattened sufficiently for him to emerge. He filled his enormous lungs. Physoline, promethium, ozone, death on an apocalyptic scale. He gave a grunt of satisfaction as his honor guard finally managed to force their own way free of the Land Raider to join him. Five Terminators of the First Order. A Land Raider could accommodate no more of the warriors alongside a Primarch. Harrick Morn led them. His armor still carried the scars of the explosion, but the injury to his flesh was nothing that a gen-hanced physique and the demand for immediate retribution could not overcome. Venerati Urien would fight on from a body of iron, but this day had come too soon for him.
"Leave nothing," said Ferris.
"With pleasure," Morn answered coldly. More transports smacked wetly into the killing field as the Primarch pushed ahead. Rhinos and Land Raiders drove into the meat wall. Massive Spartans ploughed further, disgorging scores of warriors at a time. The Cataphracti of Clan Averni waded into the dead to tear into stranded war machines. The grimly armoured destroyers of Clan Vergan blasted a path with Volkite and Phosphex. The two clans' bitter rivalry and recent history were shackled by their common fury over the fate of Venerati Urien and by the driving spear-tip of their Primarch. And the Gardenal could not stand before it. The ancient lords of the Gardenal, massive in their mortuary warplate, sought to marshal the retreat, but Ferris Manus bestrode their world like a colossus. Every blow of his hammer left crabwalkers crippled, and war machines hemorrhaging smoke from their ruin. Bullets ricocheted harmlessly off his armor. Beams bent and blades turned against his flesh. Men died unnamed and uncounted. He was war, war at its most brutal. No voice cheered him, for few welcomed the coming of war. But his towering presence drew vigor from the spent muscles of his allies and tore down the fog of evolutionary selection and drugs that had blinded the Gardenal to fear.
Ferus lifted his hammer aloft and roared for retribution as Duquesne, Cicerus, and Demeter all discovered a last reserve of strength to see his will done. This world would be uninhabitable for centuries. But he was not mankind's liberator. He was their conqueror. First Palatine, first blade of the 200, Fulgrim's firstborn. There was no warrior fraternity to which he was member, in which Arcaduana's name was not counted first. Another might have watched the passage of the likes of Eidolon and Vespasian to a Lord Commander's laurels from his languishment as a mere captain of second company, and taken it as an insult to an extraordinary talent. He knew what his talents were, and yes, they were extraordinary, but he knew his flaws just as keenly. Fulgrim, infinite in his affection for his children, had let it be known that no warrior called to fight with the Palatine blades as often as Arcaduana could be burdened with high command. The truth was that he was half the leader that Solomon Demeter already was. A totem, perhaps, an inspiration, maybe. Humble, never, until a Primarch had force-fed him an overdue share. He drew Timur from the body of the final guard, and allowed the mortal to sink quietly to the ground, amongst his dozen or so comrades. The wind at the tower's roof was cinder-hot and furious, rising from the lava sea and the firefight below. It tugged at his warrior braid as he checked over his shoulder. Humming with a tunelessness that would have enraged him not so long ago, he knelt to set the charges. There was no pain. The drugs in Tull's system had seen to that. The ground beneath him was lumpy, but not at all uncomfortable. The fact that it was the body armour of friends and comrades registered somewhere, but couldn't lodge. His mind was smooth and seemed to be ballooning by the moment. He stared up at the fortified control tower that the Gardenal had given their last to hold, but it couldn't hold his attention. He no longer cared. He saw Cicerus. Flames danced around the ultramarine's ankles as he was dragged under by a mob of ogreish genebreds. He saw Aemar. Arcs of psychic energy leapt from his flaming sword and through the tight-packed Gardenal soldiers. They burned by the hundred. A single bullet to his unhelmed head put him down. He saw Demeter shouting. The Third Legion warrior was screaming, exhorting even now. He could see Duquesne, too. The veteran drove the iron hands into the Gardenal's guns like a dozer blade. It was time for mortals to step aside. It was time for the superhumans to wage war. Tanks and fire and ungodly angels spun away from him as his vision swam, a blur of shape and colour streaked with black. The colour of Medusa. The colour of death. After what felt like a few seconds, but was clearly longer, his vision cleared. He found himself, by accident or design, looking directly at Ferus Manus. The Primarch was wrath made manifest, an avatar of the Emperor's desire for conquest, clad in sutured iron. A crab-like super-heavy walker crunched through the Space Marine's fire. Its bulk hung over the Primarch, like a planet above its moon. It raised a chipped and bolter-ravaged limb, but one of Ferus's Terminator Guard managed to heave the embattled Primarch aside before the limb crashed down. Ferus roared his outrage. He grabbed the limb, a man's width of armoured hydraulics, and crushed it in his hand. The walker struggled for a moment in Ferus's grip, a scene from Greek and myth as man drew in anthropoidal titan and broke it under his hammer. Tull felt his spirit settle, finally giving up on something that had been denying it peace. Astarte's psychology had fascinated him for years. Their existence was so removed from that of mortal men. Their bodies had been strengthened, their lifespans lengthened, their emotions engineered to rob them of fear and doubt and to reshape them to their Primarch's template. They had been made for war and nothing else. Their psychologies shaped by the scope of the changes wrought upon them. And finally Tull felt he understood. The Space Marines were as different from him as either would be from an Orc or an Eldar. They were nothing alike. And the Primarchs were an order of magnitude more distant again.
Ferus Manus was headstrong, prideful, uncompromising, inhumane, as flawed as any human being, but taken to such superhuman extremes that it took a dying man to see them as flaws. With that realization came one more, his last. He was as incomprehensible to Ferus as Ferus was to him. It wasn't a reassuring thought, but he still believed. He had to. And this time, his eyes didn't reopen. Gardenal Prime's orbital bands were clogged with debris, corroded junk tech left over from 5,000 years of exploitation, rubble from the mineral extraction from its moons. The field had oriented over the millennia into a nascent ring system, aligned to the planet's magnetic field and rotation, the entire region of supraorbital debris saturated with radiation. The fleet augurs of the 52nd and the 413th, and of the Aspect Voyager, the rogue trader vessel that had rediscovered the Gardenal system for the Imperium in 858.M30, had all detected the emissions, extrapolated the decay rate, and come to the same conclusion, that the radiation was the trace residual from the atomic devices used to crack open the planet's exhausted satellites about 1,600 years before. They were all half right. In response to the unanimous code approvals of the last lords of the Gardenal, a ring of low orbital platforms came sluggishly to life. Radiation signatures spiked as shielding was lowered, launch doors opened, and firing mechanisms that had lain dormant in space for about 1,600 years warmed through. Attitude impellers frothed, the weapons platforms each manoeuvring towards a single target. An insular imperium of 11 worlds, the lords of the Gardenal had never given serious credence to a threat from without. Their final solution had been devised accordingly. The approach to the command tower was a tangled maze of razor wire, hung with debris and the dead of the Gardenal and Legionis Astartes alike. Not in equal measure, far from it, for they were not equal, but near enough to stoke Ferris's distemper. The Gardenal's mortuary walkers carved up the killing ground between them, essentially impervious to anything more delicate than a Titan or a Primarch. Infantry and automated turrets compounded their positional advantage with weight of fire. A squad of 1,000 suns managed to drive a single walker off with repeated lashes of psychic power. An ultramarine dreadnought grappled another, his chassis creaking as the mortuary engine's strength tore it slowly in half, and all around him his brothers fell. Ferris heard a scratch, like nails drawn across ceramite, coming from his gorget. He ignored it, looking up as, in a splintering of iron gravel, the mighty warhound, Canis Luna, swiveled its arm batteries towards the command tower and unleashed. The barrage of its megabolters bruised the structure's shields, but nothing more. It was the heart of the Gardenal's defiance, and Ferus Manus wanted it rubble. He made to establish a vox link to the Firebrand's princeps, only then being forced to attend to the insistent scratch from the vox pearl under his gorget. He activated it with a grunt.
"My lord!"
The voice was Shipmaster Layrick's, a note of anxiety to it that Ferris had never associated with the Fist of Iron's mortal caretaker. The sounds of panicked command operations piggybacked the line.
"We're picking up a number of orbital signatures targeting your coordinates. Destroy them."
Ferris lowered his hammer and allowed his Terminator guard to push ahead. Above them, Canis Luna hungrily reloaded, gorging on ammo belts as though they were raw meat, and spattering the iron hands with spent casings.
"Escorts are moving to intercept, Lord, but we can't acquire accurate solutions in the radiation field, and we can't manoeuvre capital ships into the rings. I've ordered fighters recalled, but there's no time to refuel or rearm, and, my Lord, I think..."
"How many weapons?"
Silence for a moment.
"It's going to make what hit the 413th look like a warning shot."
With the fastidiousness and speed of a Primarch, Ferris took stock. Bolts and beamers made a deadly crisscross of the air. The Legionis Astartes drove into it yet, spearheaded by the might of the 10th Legion, every meter gained drawing more doggedness and resolve from the taking than the last. It was brutally hot, The older Mark power armors were beginning to whine and even seize with the radiation. The molecular disruption fields of power weapons sizzled constantly. The command tower was the heart of the Gardenal's defiance. That much was plain. But why? Was it crucial to the operation of their orbital weapons? Or did the Gardenal expect its reinforced structure and shielding to withstand the coming Holocaust? Or was there no rationale? Was this naught but a dying attempt to make this a Pyrrhic triumph for the Imperium of Man, to strike at a distant emperor by destroying the one thing he loved and could not replace, one of his sons? His admiration for the Gardenal grew.
They raised the storm. Lord? Move Fist of Iron into the rings. Ram her into every last rock, if that is what it takes. Aye, Lord.
He cut the link.
No relent!
Ferris bellowed, raising Forgebreaker high.
Fight to your last drop of strength or die here today! Wait for no man who cannot continue!
Taking his hammer two-handed and preparing to charge, he heard his vox scratch again.
What?
Above you, my Lord Primarch!
Ferris growled in surprise, but true to his own command, barreled into the Gardenal as he did so. His raw power broke them, equivalent to being rammed by a land raider.
Akujuana, where have you been?
Look up.
A multilaser mounted on an automated sentry pod a few meters along the defense line opened up on him. His armor soaked up the hail of Laz, and Forgebreaker crushed the multibarreled weapon into its tripod. Then Ferris looked up. The captain of Second Company flickered, the purple flame of a beacon, darting around the base of the dish array at the summit of the command tower without ever really moving at all. Even injured, his swords were smoke, and the soldiers of the Gardenal that charged up onto the roof to end him fell away like ash.
How did you get up there?
When you are but one of 200, you learn that one man can go places 1,000 cannot.
Grunts and the clang of steel momentarily occupied the line.
The Third Legion takes its share of losses, but by the grace of the Emperor we take fewer.
Can you disable that dish?
It is in hand,
Arkaduana laughed.
Consider this my oath upheld. You will make the Emperor a mighty regent one day. Let us hope he never requires one.
Arkaduana, what are you...
The frequency broke from the captain's end. Ferris wasted several furious seconds attempting to force its reinstatement before abandoning the effort. It had become suddenly, staggeringly futile. A white flash ignited the dish array's rockcrete base. It was barely noticeable, little more than a spark, but it set off a shockwave that rippled through the dish, disintegrating metal and rockcrete as it went. A mushrooming plume of fire succeeded the initial wave, cremating every last particle that had, through the fractions of a second between the instigating flash and this, still resembled a complete dish. Not any more. The fireball caught the front of the shockwave and rebounded back. The upper 100 meters of the tower exploded, as if an elemental had just been born within. The suddenness and scale of the eruption brought a brief, stunned lull to the fighting. Exhausted legionaries looked up, their visors darkening so as to maintain visual acuity while staring into the exuberant blaze. Ferris felt its burn in his metallic eyes. The Gardenal looked up too.
My lord, we've lost the weapon signatures. I think that...
Ferris cut off the shipmaster with a snarl. It began with one. An infantryman that had been facing off against Duquesne's clan Sorgol veterans, threw his rifle at the Lord Commander's feet. His unit followed, then the company, the battalion. By the time the clatter of falling rifles had reached the guns of the sentry posts and the crew of the battered Gardenal war machines, it was a wave that could not be resisted. Surrounded by it, finally breaking under it, the lords of the Gardenal lowered their weapon systems. Their walker suits shrank with a hiss of fluid hydraulics. Their shields sputtered out. Covering his eyes with his hand, Ferris dug fingers into his temples and growled. He could feel the migraine returning, the need to answer his pain received with pain given. But there was an old Terran saying about cutting off one's nose to spite one's face. He let the anger rasp through his lips as he gave the final order. The order that would forevermore become synonymous with the compliance
of the Gardenal.
It is done.